The original version is the 12th month, the year 2006. The current version is the 5th month, year 2020. This audio was revised on January 24th, 2012. The revision corrects my former opinion that it is a dogma that the indelible mark, a membership in a Catholic Church, can only be had by baptism of water. My current position is that this is not a dogma, because no pope is infallibly defined that baptism of water is the only way to get the indelible mark and membership in the Catholic Church. Hence, it is an allowable opinion that baptism of blood or desire for catechumens can give the indelible mark and membership in a Catholic Church, even though I do not believe in this allowable opinion of baptism of blood or desire. See RJMI book, Baptism Controversy Revision. This lecture, titled The Indelible Mark and the Immaculate Conception, was posted on my website on November 16th, year 2007. It is the first part of a two-part lecture given on December 26th, year 2006. The second part was posted on December 8th, year 2008, and is titled Predestination, Grace, and Free Will. Today is December 26, year 2006, Feast Day St. Stephen, and we're going to be talking during this, it's more like a speech, on predestination, grace, and free will, the most complicated topic in the Church, which has also caused many of the saints to even fight with one another over the doctrines of this predestination, grace, and free will, which is also known as the grace and the AIDS dispute. You know, how does God's grace along with free will, and how does He create souls, and how does He place them, and all that. And it's a very complicated topic that the Church has not yet came in and settled the dispute. And you have the Dominicans fighting with the Jesuits, fighting with the Franciscans, and they're all fighting over their own concept of how God creates souls, how He places them in time, and how God looks at the dispositions of their souls. And it caused a lot of them to accuse one another of being heretics on either sides, you know. And the problem when you're getting into this realm, which I believe is the outer limits of theology in which we can go no further, but God does want us to go there because He's already had the saints go there, and the Church has already, out of these theological disputes, defined some very important things about predestination that must be believed. And then, but it's the things that they haven't defined yet that are still left open and that the debates are there. And the danger is, if you take one step in the wrong direction in any one of these contemplations about these deepest mysteries of God on this topic, you're going to fall into either Pelagianism or Calvinism. And Pelagianism is that we can be good all by our own without the need of God's grace working inside of us, or without Him helping us in any other way. You know, maybe some external graces some of them may admit to, but the Pelagians more or less believe that God created man so perfect that He just leaves man on earth, and then man doesn't need God no more. Man can do everything all on his own. That's Pelagianism. They, in other words, free will is dominant in Pelagianism, and they deny God's grace and the necessity of God's grace working in you and God's help. The Calvinists believe the opposite. They believe free will's got nothing to do with it. That God creates souls, and some of them He put places out there, and He says, I want you to be damned, and I want you to be the elect, and God doesn't even consider the disposition of their souls, which means God will be the author of evil. He purposely creates souls to send them to hell. It's Calvinism. But during this, as I told you here, but I'm going to keep it on the record here, during the octave day of the Immaculate Conception, starting with the feast day of the Immaculate Conception, God has inspired all of us here in Mary's Little Remnant, myself starting the discussion on it, and everybody else responding by their opinions and their thoughts, and all of us, God has used all of us here in Mary's Little Remnant to give a little piece to the puzzle. And God, during the octave day of the Immaculate Conception, revealed the deepest mysteries of predestination, which I've been struggling with for many years to want to write on this. And we even had some pieces of the puzzle to presentation. Was it the presentation feast day? And now we had big pieces coming together in these 8 days. God's been flooding us with the octave of Immaculate, with graces unbelievable to come to these really deep mysteries. Us few puny little people here, I'm here to remember that God is revealing these things to us. As our Lord said, He reveals His deepest mysteries to those who have His little ones, those who are humble and meek. Now, the day before the Immaculate Conception, our brother in Christ, Nicholas Wurr, sent us our best relic that we have so far. He sent us many relics. But this one, as I mentioned to you, is the hair of Mary. We have one of Mary's hairs, a relic from St. Joseph, and there's a relic in the middle that's either the cross of Christ or the crib from Christ. I'm not sure. But we got this the day before the Immaculate Conception feast day. And then right from that feast day, when I gave that sermon, God started flooding us with graces to come to some of these very, very hard solutions that the saints have been fighting over, and to try to determine what's happening. I'm not going to present it in the exact sequence in which God has brought it to us, but I'm going to present one topic, the second, and the third, so we're going to go on. And anybody wants to comment during this thing, we can comment as we're going on and ask questions. Now, the first thing that that's not really the first thing we were talking about, but it's one of the things. So I'm not doing it in the exact sequence in which it came in. But it happened by first me contemplating about a miracle that took place since the Immaculate Conception. I always wanted to, and I still am going to, write deeply about the second greatest miracle, which is the Immaculate Conception, which took place in the womb of St. Anne. So something very much miraculous happened when St. Joachim and St. Anne came together to have Mary. And so something very much miraculous happened in the womb of St. Anne so that she could give birth, conceive the Immaculate Conception and give birth. And that's something I've always wanted to do. Now I have the pieces on the puzzle to be able to handle all of that. But we'll get back to that in a minute. That was got me onto all these other different areas of predestination. Now the first thing that you want to consider is the creation of the soul. When does the actual soul go into the womb, okay, to the flesh? The flesh seed is first created and is in the womb, and then God infuses this, creates the soul within the flesh later on. That's not the main topic we're going to talk about here. We're going to talk about the fact that when God creates souls, okay, a human being, and he does put that soul in the flesh, okay, how does he do it? For instance, some of the saints are saying God creates the soul first outside of the flesh and then infuses it into the flesh. Okay? Now, I'm going to explain to you why that cannot be. And I'm going to explain to you the truth of the matter is that God creates the soul within the flesh itself. Right within the flesh, God creates the soul. So there's not one instance that God creates the soul outside of the flesh and then infuses it into the womb. And we're going to give you the reasons why. And he was arguing with one saint on that because he's saying, well, if that happens and God creates the soul outside of the flesh, and we know that it's created, it has original sin, it inherits it from Adam and Eve, where does the original sin come from? Is the soul created perfect and pure so that there was an instant that mankind was pure and then comes into the flesh and becomes infected? That can't be because man always had original sin. So the only way you can maintain that is to say that if God creates the soul outside of the flesh and then infuses it, when that soul is outside of the flesh, the instant God creates the soul, he lets Satan come in that very instant and inject original sin into that soul. But why can that not be? Because original sin did not come from Satan, but from Adam and Eve. It's inherited by their flesh seed. It's inherited sin. If that happens, you're losing the concept of the inherited sin. It comes from the corrupted flesh of Adam and Eve, which through the generation of man coming together with women, is passed through the seed. So now we know that's one reason, definitely, that the soul cannot be created outside the flesh and then infused. It has to be created within the flesh itself. And another reason is this. If God created the soul outside of the flesh and then infused it, that means you will be dead before you were born. Because death, the definition of death is the separation of the soul from the body. And when the soul leaves the body, you have death. So then you would have had, each person would have been literally dead before he was born. Because the soul would have existed outside of his body and then infused into his body. So now this is definitive proof. The soul has to be created within the flesh itself. And it has to contract the venom, it has to contract original sin from the corrupted flesh. Because it's inherited. So it has to come from the flesh seed. That's definite. So now this is fact. This is 100%. Soul created within the flesh. The original sin then comes from the corrupted flesh that injects the venom of original sin into the soul the very instant it's created. So there's not one instant that soul exists where it didn't have original sin. So the minute God creates the soul within the flesh, that very instant, that soul now is within that flesh, the flesh injects the venom of original sin into the soul. And let's say, just take for the sake of the argument, that the soul doesn't come into the body till 3 months later or a month later or whatever. It works both ways. This makes it easier for you to understand this. The flesh seeds come together and you got the flesh. The soul's not in there yet. You have the flesh, which is going to be a human being when God creates the soul in that flesh. That flesh has inherited in its DNA, and you can really, because it comes from the flesh, original sin. They call it not original sin, but the venom of original sin. The venom, because it's not original sin. You cannot say that just the flesh has original sin. Only the soul could have original sin, which is the living part of the man. But the flesh itself contains the venom, the poison, that it shoots into the soul and poisons it with original sin. Coming through the flesh seed. And also that venom that's inside the flesh itself causes the concupiscence of the flesh. It shoots concupiscence into the flesh, so your flesh is concupiscent too. So, now, the soul gets, God now creates the soul within the flesh, and the very instant that that soul is created within the flesh, it injects the venom of original sin into the soul. Now, what are we saying? God creates nothing evil. The soul he created was not evil. Where did it get its evil from? Adam and Eve, the flesh, corrupted flesh. Even the original sin that man gets does not come from God. It comes from Adam and Eve. And at this point in time, man is not even capable of committing an actual sin until he achieves the use of reason. So he's not even capable of committing a moral sin. So in this we can see how God created man perfect. And he even still creates souls perfect if it were not for the original sin, which God didn't create anyway, which comes from Adam and Eve. So God makes everything perfect. Our sin comes from human beings and the abuse of our free will, and the original sin itself comes from the corrupted seed, the embryo, or they would call that a fetus then, that's not yet having a soul in it, which injects the venom of original sin into the soul. Now, what do we have? We have a soul that has original sin. We have a concupiscent flesh that's poisoned also from the same venom of original sin that comes from the corrupted seed, and it's in the DNA, no doubt. It's in how does man, even scientists, know this? Our traits are handed down through DNA, through what your parents was, blue eyes, blonde hair, and so forth. Same thing with original sin. If it's inherited from human beings, it has to be something within our flesh that we hand on to one another. It's inherited, just like blue eyes, blonde hair, only this is the contamination, the venom, that we, because of the original sin, that's in our very cellular level structure itself that we hand on from generation to generation. And that this particular venom, which they call it, not original sin, because the flesh itself cannot have original, be guilty of original sin, it's not a human being yet. But the flesh itself has the venom of original sin. And the flesh itself is corrupted with this venom. And you can just see God going there changing the DNA structure to make it mutate and to bring disease upon man. God allowed that to happen. That's part of original sin. And so all this is being inherited from us because of the downfall of Adam and Eve. And so they give us the venom of original sin. And the venom of original sin gives the flesh seed corruption, concupiscence, and it also shoots original sin into the soul. Okay, now we have the soul. And you can see how this works so perfectly. We have the soul now that has original sin, which it got from the flesh. Now, baptism, as we know, to somebody who is worthy and desires to have baptism and really wants to be baptized, has the right dispositions, sanctifies that soul and cleanses it from original sin. So the original sin is no longer in the soul. But the flesh still has the concupiscence. It still has, because of the venom that's in it, because the flesh, and that's why our Lord, he's referred to, he says there's really two redemptions, there's really only one thing that does the redemption, is death on the cross. But he says your flesh is not yet redeemed until the general judgment when you get your new bodies. He calls it the redemption of the body. We don't have that yet. Even St. Paul says, even though your soul's sanctified, and that's really the living part in you that counts, that's going to make you saved, your flesh is still concupiscent. Your flesh is still under the has got an inclination here that's dangerous, that St. Paul recognizes. He says, I see two powers fighting in me. I see the flesh pulling me one way and the spirit pulling me the other. So when you're sanctified, you still got the venom of original sin inside you, your flesh, the venom, because if, for instance, take your parents, you have one kid, and he's baptized, he's sanctified. You're sanctified because you were baptized. Let's say you're even a state of Christ. You don't have original sin. But if you come together, you're going to create a kid. You're not going to create him, but you're going to create this flesh for a kid, and you're going to give him original sin, even though you don't have it. So where's it coming from? It's not coming from your soul. Your soul doesn't have original sin. You're giving your kid, and every kid that you propagate, original sin through your flesh seed that still has the venom in it. And it will have that venom in the concupiscence in till we get our bodies redeemed on the general judgment. When God says, I will then purify your bodies. I will give you a new flesh. They will never die again. Impassible bodies. No venom of original sin. No concupiscence. And that's the redemption of the flesh, which comes after the second coming. He first came to redeem our souls, which is the most important thing, which grants us salvation. And then later he redeems the flesh in the body. God creates the soul within the corrupted flesh. Within that flesh. That flesh shoots, with its venom, the original sin into the soul. The soul gets baptized. He's cleansed of original sin. But guess what? The venom is still in the flesh. Why doesn't it shoot it back in there again and re-corrupt it? Well, my first thought was, well, maybe it only happens when the soul is first created within the flesh, and that creation of the soul in contact with the flesh triggers the injection of the original sin. But that cannot be it, and I will tell you why. Because now let's take, for instance, a soul that is free from original sin, and he's resurrected again. He dies, and his soul leaves his body, because we have resurrections. Resurrection from the dead, the soul really leaves the body, and then God lets the soul come back into the body. And we have that in the example of the history of the church. So now if we have a soul that's free from original sin, and he dies, and his soul leaves his body, and God determines to resurrect him and let him come back into his flesh, he'd get reinfected with original sin again by the venom because of the contact of the soul with the flesh. So we then determine it cannot be that way, because it can't be, because I think of what triggers the venom to shoot it into the soul, because once the person's sanctified, it's not going to keep shooting it back in there. So we thought it was the first contact of the soul with the flesh triggers it. That can't be, because if the soul dies and goes out of its body and comes back into its flesh, it's going to shoot it in there again. But once you're clear from original sin, you can never get it again. And here comes the great thing, and this is, I don't want to write about this, so then God gives us the solution. I says, you know what it is? What happens when you're baptized? You not only get sanctified from original sin, you get the indelible mark. And the indelible mark creates a barrier so that the venom can no longer be shot back into that soul. It's a barrier, the indelible mark. It's called the character of baptism. Now, this theology I'm just explaining to you, it's the only explanation as to why original sin does not reinfect the soul after it's purified from the corrupted flesh. The indelible mark creates a barrier, a preventive barrier, so that the venom of original sin can no longer go back into the soul. But the venom is still corrupting the flesh, because we always have the concupiscence. So once you're baptized by water and you get that indelible mark, the indelible mark prevents the soul from being reinfected. So even if you died and your soul went outside your body, your soul still has the indelible mark. God resurrects you and puts your soul back into your flesh. You can never get reinfected with original sin, because the indelible mark, which is a character of baptism, prevents it from being reinjected into the soul. Without that character, your soul is going to continue. As soon as you're sanctified, you're reinfected.
It's like a vaccine.
Exactly. It's like a vaccine. It's a vaccine from future corruption of original sin. And there is no other explanation. The one I gave in the beginning was the one I first thought, that the soul, when it comes in contact with the flesh for the first time, triggers it. And so the minute that when God creates that soul within the flesh, because it's the first time it comes in contact with that flesh, it triggers the venom to go in. But then when I thought about resurrections, when souls leave the body and go back into the body, said it can't be, because then they would be reinfected again.
Right. They, never has you get re-baptized.
Never again. Oh, never. That is, as a matter of fact, anybody who is in hell has been baptized does not have original sin and never will. They got the character in hell even. So the only solution, it is the only answer. Now we can understand, without that indelible mark, you ain't never going to be free from original sin. It's going to keep re-injecting itself into the soul. There is no other mechanism to explain why the soul doesn't get reinfected from the venom that comes from the corrupted flesh. Because the venom's still in there. If your parents had another kid, you're going to give that one original sin. And then, because it's in your, that proves that inside you Catholic parents who have no original sin, it proves that inside your flesh, even now, all of us in this room have the venom of original sin in our concupiscent flesh. And that's how we hand it down to our offspring. And it's always there until the second coming, when Jesus Christ, we benefit from his redemption off of that.
That's also why you're, when you go to heaven finally, you're going to have a glorified
body. No concupiscence of the flesh, no venom of original sin. That's throughout the scriptures. Christ died on the cross to redeem both soul and body, but he said, the soul comes first, I don't redeem the body till... you don't benefit from the redemption, because the redemption is already there, but you don't benefit from the fruit of it until the general judgment, and that's throughout the scriptures, that we're carrying this load in our body that's still there. And that also explains how we can carry around the concupiscent flesh, and we still have the venom of original sin in our flesh. The venom, not original sin, but the venom, and the soul could be purified of original sin. And that's the conflict St. Paul so wonderfully talks about, and that we all know about, the conflict of the flesh with the spirit. And he says, I see two powers working in me. I see my sanctified soul fighting with my corrupted flesh, my concupiscent flesh. I see this power in me. And that's what he's talking about. Now, when we came to that final conclusion, we were talking about this particular, how God creates souls. And we started out because trying to figure out how Mary was created, and St. Joachim and St. Anne. That's how it all started, by the way. And that's how we came to these conclusions. And then I thought about, well, what is to prevent the venom? And we came out, as I said, that first there cannot be. There is only one answer, and one answer only, the indelible mark. And the character of baptism, as Rick Gonzalez just said here, is the vaccine. It's like a vaccine. And there is no other answer. But this is what I call what we just came up with during this octave day of our Blessed Mother, the necessity of the indelible mark to prevent the soul from being reinfected with the venom of original sin which comes from the concupiscent flesh. You need water baptism. And water baptism not only sanctifies the soul, it puts the vaccine in there of the indelible mark which prevents it from being reinfected. And that's an impeccable theology. I don't think anybody's even going to walk around that theology. It has all the answers. And this is one thing God gave us amongst a multitude of things. So that was my first topic on that. What brought us about on that was when St. Joachim and St. Anne came together, our discussion was that the Blessed Mother, of course, for one moment never has sin. The flesh is first created, and then the soul comes into it later on, 3 months later. Our question would Mary even have a concupiscent flesh in which her soul was created in? We know. No, not even that. So then what are we talking about here? The seed of Joachim, in a sense, a miracle took place, either way you look at this, in the womb of St. Anne, when they came together, St. Joachim and St. Anne. The seed came together with the egg, and God purified the seed in the egg from its concupiscence and from its venom, and pulled the venom out, pulled out the concupiscence. For when Mary came together, that seed came together, because Mary was created like with the real parents, biological parents. Now, you could argue about where does the corruption of the DNA come from, the father or the woman. And I would go as far to say, if God allows it, he may even let scientists go in there at the DNA level and find out where this corrupted... Here's the original sin thing in the DNA that inherits the original sin. It's got to be in there. It's of the flesh. They can go in there and find out what makes you sweat. And I can tell you for sure that wasn't in the Garden of Paradise. That was added in later. But you get the point. We started out by discussing what happened in the womb of St. Anne. We're saying that not even Mary's flesh, an obvious Mary's flesh, doesn't have the venom or the concupiscence. Now, are we going to say that it had it for an instant, it was purified? No, not even that. Because what did God do? He went in there and purified the seed of St. Joachim and the egg of St. Anne and pulled out the venom, pulled out the concupiscence. So when those seeds came together, there was no venom of original sin. There was no concupiscence. And that's how the Immaculate Seven, God's foregoing words that he was going to earn on the cross through the redemption, went in there and purified those two seeds. By the fruits of his redemption on the cross, when he paid that debt, he went ahead of time and pulled those things back, the merits, and he cleansed the two seeds. So that when those seeds came together and made Mary, there was no venom of original sin, there was no concupiscence.
One question. Couldn't he have just, instead of cleansing them at all, couldn't he have just started them perfectly clean, knowing that they were going to...
Yes, that was our other argument. And this one we don't know yet. That one is up in the air. We said, would even the seeds be corrupted? Or could he have made it so that when these seeds were created, the very seeds that he knew were going to be Mary were generated and even the seeds weren't corrupted? That's where we ended. Now, there's a legitimate argument on that. What we know is not true, and I tried, you cannot say that, and some people try to say St. Anne had an immaculate conception herself. God purified Anne from original sin, but then it would have been enough. He would have had to purify her flesh from concupiscence. So she is another immaculate conception, and that's not true. So St. Joachim and St. Anne were not purified of original sin. Their souls, and neither were their fleshes. The venom was still in there. So God did something unique to those two seeds that were going to be Mary. Now, he either did it after the seeds were created, or previous to their creation, by not making it possible for them to even have it in the first place. Right. That's what I tend to believe in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
One thought on that, if it happened, if the soul didn't come into the body until like 3 months later, I'm thinking, well, what does that flesh mean then? It's not really human, is it?
No, it's not human, because a human, when God first created Adam, he was not human yet, he was flesh, and then he breathed soul into him, and so that can happen. And when you read about the original creation, by the way, we're looking at Adam being created, and God said, I breathed the soul into him. He didn't say, I infused the soul into him. I created a soul within the flesh of Adam, but first he built up the flesh, and then he breathed the soul into Adam. You even read about Ezekiel when he's constructing the bones and sinews of a man and puts the flesh on. He says, now, son of man, the soul shall come and enter the man. Now, the idea we did get into, we said, would Mary's seeds, that means St. Joachim's seed and Anne's egg, that are going to be Mary, were they ever corrupted with the venom and concupiscence, and so that God purified them and it came together? Or, and as I do believe, it was purified before it was even, as it was generated, so it didn't even have the concupiscence. God made that seed and that egg come about without it. So even the seed and the egg didn't have the concupiscence and the venom of original sin. Just those individual seeds. Everyone else did. And so there's no doubt that it's either one or the other. That's the miracle that took place in the womb of St. Anne. I've been always wanting to write about this. Going way back, I spoke publicly about it and said I wanted to do this one day. And so during this octave, they were coming across with all these abundant super infusions of graces on not just this topic I just spoke to you now, but we're going to get into the other topics too about predestination, grace and free will, and all that. We'll get that in a moment. But that was what was very, very great about this topic was when we finally got to the bottom. And because here's another thing I always wanted to write about. I wanted to write about the indelible mark. I mean, what is that? Chopped liver? It don't mean anything. There's got to be something. Not that chopped liver is totally bad. Is it nothing? The indelible mark's got to mean something. Are you telling me really, literally, that there's people in heaven right now? There's some people in heaven with the character and the indelible mark and some that aren't? It mocks the mark, and it puts certain people in heaven who have the mark and certain people in heaven who don't have the mark. It's insanity. Mm-hmm. Theologically, I will say it 1,000 times, the proponents of baptism, desire, and blood, the legitimate opinion, have no theology to back them up. It's chaotic, it's destructive, and very dangerous. And they've never even attempted to go into these areas. And whenever Robert Bellarmine tried to explain it, by the body and the soul of the church, he got all messed up and created even a bigger mess. It's the answer of what I say here. So God has revealed during this octave day of our Blessed Mother, through the mediation of our Blessed Mother, these two deep mysteries. The one about the indelible mark, which I never thought I was going to get, and how souls are created, and the venom of original sin being injected in it, and how it doesn't get... So that, and the miracle that took place in the womb of St. Anne, which we were also discussing. Then, it didn't stop there. We started getting into the whole idea of how God creates souls in His mind, and He places in time, and He determines who's bad and who's good, you know, that's the next thing we're going to talk about. Now, I think we should probably break these conversations off in between each topic, or should we just continue with it? How long have we been going on this one? Does it say over on there? We can continue with it, and it doesn't matter. How much time do we have on that one? Oh, it doesn't tell you the time. All right. Well, you can keep it running. It doesn't matter. We can splice it up. Well, you know what? Stop it just in case something happens to this one, and we'll restart it. For further study, read my book, The Baptism Controversy, and the chapter titled The Indelible Mark, which was added to that book in the year November 2007. And also read my book, The Miracle of the Immaculate Conception, which was completed and added to my website in November 2007. This recording is produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878. Visit our St. John the Baptist website at www.johnthebaptist.us or email me, Richard Joseph Michael Ibrani, at rjmi@johnthebaptist.us or send for a catalog to the just mentioned address.